And this is the 4th of December at 9:35 in the morning in the principal's office of Choctaw Central at the Choctaw Reservation, Philadelphia, Mississippi. I'm about to conduct an interview with Mr. Gibson. Mr. Gibson, will you just say your name?
My name is Calvin Gibson, and I'm a social worker for the Choctaw Indian Agency.
Uh-huh. And are you a full-blooded Choctaw?
Yes, I am. I'm a full-blooded Choctaw. My mother is full-blooded Choctaw. My father is, too.
Which of the reservations, or whatever you call them around here, do you come from?
I belong to the Conahatta community.
Right. How far is that? How far?
It's a quarter mile from here, a quarter mile from work every day.
Mm-hmm. Do you live here and travel out there?
No, I live in Conahatta. I come up to work 40 miles every day to Philadelphia.
Because your work is mostly around here and not in the Conahatta community?
Yes, the headquarters is Philadelphia, and I come to Philadelphia, and there I pick up my car, and my office is there. And then I go to several other communities. I go to Redwater community, which is 25 miles from here. And I go to Standing Pine community, which is approximately about the same distance, except it's in a different area. And then I serve Sandersville, which is about 90 miles from here. I go one day out of the month. So I have to come into my main office, and then from there I go out to the field.
What will happen to you if gas gets in short supply? How many miles are you averaging a day?
Oh, sometimes. Right now, since the gas shortage, the GSA motor crew has sent us a statement on it, and we're cutting down on our fuel days each week. We're not going every day. It's like we used to. We go 2 days out of the week now.
Only two?
Only 2 days, and try to cover these areas. And we have other workers through in the office, and try to utilize all the people that works in the office, and try to encourage people to come in or meet us at some school or meet us here at the reservation and use the workers that they have in the reservation.
What's your age, Mr. Gibson, if you're not sensitive about age?
I'm age 33.
Uh-huh. Were you educated here at this Choctaw Central?
Not namely as Choctaw Central. Before, they had a Pearl River Indian School. This is a Pearl River Reservation. The name is Pearl River. And they had a small school here, and the school is not here anymore because it's demolished, you know, and it just went to the 10th grade, and I went as far as the 10th grade, and then I went to a Haskell Indian Institute in Lawrence, Kansas to finish my high school last 2 years, 11 or 12. And when I finished 11 or 12, and I went to a junior college in Newton, which is below Conahatta, where I live, and finished my junior college there, and I went to University of Southern Mississippi at Hattiesburg and finished my last 2 years there.
And you got a BA degree? Did you take special work in social?
Yes, I did.
Social work?
And I'm still taking courses in social work now. The social work school in Athens, Georgia is giving me correspondence course now, so that I can finish and probably get a master's degree and be a regular fledged social worker, because that was not my major when I first started out, see. My major was in elementary education when I first started out. But I substitute teach for 4 months in the fourth grade, and I find out that teaching, you have to stay in most of the time and cooped up in a place, and most of the classrooms we have is a one-room classroom, you know, that they don't switch classes for different things and no P's and so forth. So at that time when I was substituting, so I just changed my major over to social work, and then I get more extra courses to become a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, last semester, I took Introduction to Social Work course here, which was taught at night here at the school. They have different colleges now that brings courses to the reservation.
How many colleges do it, and what are they?
Well, Tugelo College from Jackson That's T-O-U-G-A-L-O. They bring courses up here. I don't know what type of courses, but it's they here Tuesdays and Thursdays, I believe. And then University of Southern brings courses here.
That's Hattiesburg.
Hattiesburg. They bring courses here. And Mississippi State at one time did prior to this time, but they not, I don't believe they're here now. And then also Mississippi State is bringing courses, not here, but to Meridian Junior College, where you can go to school, attend school there in the daytime or night, and get a degree there. You don't have to go to Mississippi State at Starkville, which is about 60-70 miles from here.
Well, these courses you're getting work toward a master's degree.
Mm-hmm. Trying to.
You're aiming at that.
Right.
When you got a master's degree, would you be entitled to higher pay scales?
Yes, I would. I would be. Right now, I'm entitled a social service representative. Just sort of us, not a regular social worker, but you. The social worker is just one social worker there at the position there. And we are representative from there working from the area. And when you get to be a full-fledged social worker, you can get more pay and a better grade position, see.
Who's your employer?
Well, I work for the agency that's under the agency, but then we have different departments. We have about 12 or 13 departments in the agency itself, see.
Well, and, now, Zach, you're working for the tribe, or are you working for the BIA?
No, I'm working for the BIA.
I see.
Yes, this is on the Bureau of Indian Affairs and in the Social Service Department. And we have other departments like Employment Assistance, Credit Administration, and Home Economics, and Maintenance, and Programs, and so forth. So they have all departments in there to represent the people and try to work with a relationship with the tribe program.
Now, are you... Was Choctaw your native tongue? Did the first language you ever spoke Choctaw? Or?
Yes, as far as I know, that's all we spoke in the home when we grew up. And we have nine boys and a girl in the home.
Good heavens. This is your brothers and sisters?
Yes, my brothers and sisters, and we all spoke Choctaw until we left home and went to school and learned how to talk English. And
you learned how to talk English in school?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And, well, when I went to school here, I spoke English, but not all that good, and I guess I still don't speak it fluently or enough where other people speaks it, but I try my best. When I was in high school, I didn't speak it all that good till I came to college. And then when I took English, I found out that English course was the hardest course that I ever took. I took it 2 years in a row. I took English, first English 1 and English 2. Then I didn't make a good grade. I made a D. So the second year, my sophomore year, I took it over again. My advisor said that I didn't have to take it. He said, you passed it. I said, yes, but with a low grade. So I took it over again. See if I could do better, and I made one grade up, you know. But he said usually English 1 and English 2 is a hard course for even an English-speaking people, he said. Even the people who spoke it all their life cannot major in English or cannot speak good English or whatever, he said. So, but in the home, we don't, in my home, we don't talk English all that much. I speak Choctaw every day.
Well, you're married, I suppose,
yes.
And have a family of your own.
Well, I don't have no kids of my own. Mm-hmm. I have two foster children that I keep.
Oh, do you? Are they Choctaw kids?
Mm-hmm. They're Choctaw kids. And but we speak Choctaw in the home all the time. And whatever we do, we go to church, we speak in Choctaw, we sing in Choctaw, and read the Bible in Choctaw. It's not that I'm against white English. It's just that's what I'm used to. If I'm used to English, just like at work. When I'm at work, I speak English every day.
But your fullest expression to really get down to the nuts and bolts of it would be Choctaw.
Right.
You'd feel you could get through better.
I could get through better with Choctaw. Since we Choctaws here, people here, we can talk to us much better than we can do English, I believe.
Have you got any idea of what is so difficult about English for a Choctaw speaker? You remember what hung you up especially? Could you analyze that?
Well,
I don't know the mechanics of Choctaw language at all, of course.
Well, but this is what I see, though. I've seen a white man can speak Indian language just as good as I can. In fact, there is a man in Cherokee named Mr. Parrish, Mr. Bo Parrish. He's a preacher. That he can talk Cherokee, and he taught it one time, taught the writings of it. When we was at his home several years ago, he showed it to us about the language, and like my brother, my youngest brother, sort of, he's 11 now. When he was small, when a baby is small, whether it's white, black, Choctaw, whatever you teach him when he's a little kid, that's what he learned. My little brother, he spoke English from very little. When he was born and ready to talk, they spoke English to him and all. And he didn't know when to talk till he went to school. Till he went to school and played with other Indian kids, and then they talked Choctaw to him. That's where he picked it up. And he, right now, if he talked Choctaw to you, he'll have this broken type that he speaks English so much that his Choctaw language does not come out fluently.
Well, I mean, what are the critical differences? When you're talking English, is it a problem remembering the words or thinking up the words? Or is it the verbs, the action words?
Trying to think it up, see. And another thing is that if I read here, if I read a line, I read it backwards, sort of, see, in Choctaw. Like, I can say, in English, I go to work. But then, when I speak in Choctaw, I say work first and bring it back this way. See, when I speak English and talk Choctaw, when I speak English, I go this way, and when I talk Choctaw, I'm coming backwards.
The action words in Choctaw come first, call English verbs.
Uh-huh, that's right.
I see.
That's right. You don't necessarily say it in a way that we talk. Like, if I have to translate what they said, I'm going to have to be saying it sort of backwards, but still say the same thing, see?
Can you read Choctaw?
Well, the Bible I can.
Only the Bible?
The Bible and the songbook. I guess they have a Choctaw kind of a dictionary book. It's called Definer. Somebody put that out, and I can read that. I can read most of it. But it's the writing part. I don't know if there's a writing letters for Choctaw. I haven't seen it. If it is, some people do write it on their own, you know.
But you can't. You know where the written language came from?
No, sir.
The missionaries put it together.
Yes, sir.
Almost throughout the country they did. It's something they developed from list, I guess, what you'd call phonetically.
Yeah, you know? Phonetically. That's what I was going to say, because some of the spelling don't seem to say the words that you're saying, but then they use this long A or long or short form, you know, the way you say it and the way phonetically you put it together, you know. I'm pretty sure when I take phonetics in high school, I mean college, they showed some of these things, like even your own name, you know. Like, my name is Calvin, but you can use it with a K, and then K-A-L, I'm going to a hyphen type in between and put V-I-N, and then you can have almost the same things as the way you say it.
Have you got an Indian name?
No.
Just this name?
Just this name, man. I always wondered, you know, way back, like my father's time and his father's time and his time. What was my name? How did it happen to become a Gibson given to an Indian, you know? Things like this, but I never.
That's interesting about the Florida Indians. Their names sound more Indian. I mean, your
That's
name
right.
could be Scotch or English
That's
or anything
right.
else, but you know the chairman of the Miccosukee tribe is Buffalo Tiger, and mm-hmm. wouldn't anybody mistake that.
That's right.
But then you've got a lot of family names here like Seminole. I mean, I've met some people named Jim around here,
mm-hmm.
last name.
Yes, sir.
and Billy, a last name. That's, those are Seminole names, too.
Seminoles, but when you get out western, then that's when you really go to Indian names.
Yeah.
Like Broke Shoulder, or White Head, and so
that
forth.
That type of thing.
Yes.
How do you feel about you? You had to go off to the Haskell Institute to complete your education, I guess because they didn't admit the Indians to white schools here.
Well, then, I don't know if that was really necessary or not. I mean, because some kids, just some, went to public school in Meridian, I guess.
Of your generation?
Of the time that I went to high school. But it was just that my father and mother and them, you know, strongly wanted us to get an education. And if we went to a boarding school, then we would get it. See, we stay at the school, at the boarding school, and then you take the type of education you want and if you want it. And it also, these schools had vocations with it. And what my father had said was that if you're not college material, then you can take some of this vocation and learn some skills so you can fall back on that skill.
Did you do it?
Well, I took a vocation, and I use it once in a while.
What was it?
Baking.
Oh,
bakery. I took welding for a while, but when I was 13 years old, I was fixing a fence. And I took that nail, this U-type nail, and I wasn't holding the wire, and it popped out and it hit my eye on this side, this right eye. And ever since then, I can't use it very well. I mean, I use it pretty good sometimes, but then, like welding, when I was welding, that sparks and all, my eye got affected on it, and I couldn't see it well in order to weld. So I had to change vocation, and when I did, I just took bakery. I didn't think I'd ever use it, but when I took my achievement test, I made high enough to go to college, so I said, well, I probably won't use it. But anyway, I took bakery, and then I worked. When I took bakery for about 6 weeks, and a part-time job opened up in Lawrence, Kansas for a night position. My boss asked me if I wanted to go. I said, am I doing well enough to take the job? He said, yeah, you can learn. So that's how I paid with my father and my mother. My mother didn't work at that time. My father was the only person who worked but didn't make all that much either. So I worked at school, and me and my younger brother went to high school, and we kind of bought our own clothes and spending money. Then we didn't depend on him for 2 years through high school. And then during the summer, I stayed there and worked in the bakery. And then when I came here and went to school to finish my last 2 years at Hattiesburg, I worked at bakeries at night. So the vocational that I took at high school helped me to finish my schooling. I didn't have to borrow any money from the student loan or whatever, see. I just worked, and since then, several times since I've been out of school, if I'm out of work, or even Christmas time or Thanksgiving time, the bakery at Forest might call me and says, I need you to come and help me a little bit, if you want to moonlight a little bit. So I go and do that sometime, you know, and I feel that I've been blessed with the skills that I've got, that I use it to help myself and use it to help other people too.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting thing to have picked up.
And I don't feel badly about going away to school. I'm not saying that. I wouldn't say that just because Indians couldn't go to white school, you went to high school. I mean, I don't think it's necessary to say that, because a person, even though what you can do here at home, if you want to go somewhere bad enough, no one's going to keep you here. Even if you can go to public school, or even if you can do anything what the white people can do here, if you want to go to out west, nobody's going to keep you here.
How do you feel about the boarding school experience as a way of living?
I believe it helped me. I believe it did. You learn to rely on yourself. Responsibility. Another thing that you most of the time you're home, your mother takes care of your clothes, irons for you, wash for you, and all of that. Wake you up every morning, so you go, you eat breakfast and time to go to school. But this way at boarding school, you did your own thing. You wash your own clothes, you iron your own clothes, and then you ate at the time they eat. You got up on your own, showed a little responsibility for yourself. And when whatever school starts, you're supposed to be there, so you go on your own. Nobody have to push you there at school time. You got to go to school, a thing like that. Yeah.
Don't they send some Indian kids to boarding schools who are more or less incorrigible at home?
Mm-hmm.
There
yes.
were four or five Seminole boys around here who've yeah. been sent here because their folks couldn't handle them.
That's true.
Are there any still here?
Oh, yes, there's some here.
How they get along, you know?
I think they get along pretty good. The other day we was talking to one in our office. Financially, he was his folks weren't able to help him, so he asked us to see if we could help him, and we going to put him to work for a couple hours every evening to earn him, spend any money. He's a senior, so he needs rings and so forth, whatever seniors need to graduate, you know, they have to buy it on their own. So we help kids, and this Osceola boy is still here that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And he played football for a couple of years. Good football players.
Yeah, a lot of them are very good football
yes,
players.
Right.
Well, are many of your people that you know of have gone and got a college degree as you have?
Quite a few of them.
Have?
Quite a few of them did before I did. That's why a lot of people wants to finish, I believe. Someone else went and finished. Someone else got a master's degree. Someone got a doctor's degree, something like that, that kind of puts you in your mind that if this Choctaw can do it, you can do it too. See, principal of the school here, Choctaw Central, is my brother. And he went on.
Oh, yeah. What are his first name?
Jimmy Gibson.
Well, it's got a middle name too, Jimmy Lee.
Jimmy Lee.
I met him when we were here in March, you see,
when
we first put the proposition mm-hmm. to him whether they wanted to accept this as a tribal business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, he's your brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see. Well, have you known many people of your generation that left the reservation, went off, and got embedded in the white society?
I really...
You know any?
No. No, I don't.
They mostly come back.
Yes, some come back and some stay away, but I don't know if they embedded in a white society. I don't know if that's the reason they not back or what.
Do they come back to visit?
Yes, they come back to visit. They come back to visit at least once a year or maybe a couple years later or whatever. I have another brother that lives in Denver, Colorado, actually Colorado Springs. He works for the Army as a civilian. He's a safety instructor. And he finished college at Southeastern State Teachers College in Durant, Oklahoma. Majored in mathematics, I believe it was. And
how long has he lived out there?
Well, 3-4 years now.
You think he'll eventually come back to the reservation? Or?
He might. He's had chances to come back to teach here, but he just wants to stay out there, I believe. Kind of less complicated, probably. I don't know.
What draws them back? So many Indians that have been brought up on reservations do come back sooner or later. What would you say, does it?
To answer your question.
It's okay. Flooding.
To answer your question, I couldn't quite specifically say why they can't come back sometime, because quite a few people has lived in Chicago or Memphis, Tennessee or somewhere for several years, like say 10 years or something. Then they come back and live here. And I don't know, it's because maybe they've lived away so long that they, for the last few years or how many years that they lived, they got life to live, they probably just come back to the hometown and stay with the people. Till whatever happens, or I do not know what can specifically say why, because if it's for jobs, we don't have good jobs like Chicago or Tennessee or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's if they don't have no education or whatever, then we don't have nothing too much to offer to people like that that has been in a good position elsewhere, see. And then they come back here and have to get a lower paid job.
Well, now you live on the Conahatta Reservation, is that right?
That's right.
And nobody on a reservation can own the ground, can they?
No.
I mean, you can't own real estate.
I lease mine.
You lease what, the house?
I lease a 25 acre piece land for 25 years optional.
From whom, the tribe?
From the tribe.
And how about the house?
The house, I'm building on it, and I'm paying for the house myself. And they said that, and they said as long as I pay the lease, and I paid up my 25-year lease so I can live on it 25 years.
You mean you paid that clear? You
mm-hmm.
don't owe anything?
No. No, I don't, because
but
I...
But you're having to pay on the house.
On the house, I do. On the house, I still do. I still got about 9 more years, and I'll have it paid.
Well, what happens to the house at the end of 25 years? I mean...
Well, I can lease it. Well, it's a 25-year optional. And you get 25, and you actually can live there 50, see, 25 more years optional on it.
Could you leave it to a...
Yes.
A descendant?
Yes, sir.
You could will the house?
Mm-hmm.
And so that little piece of land could really stay under the control of your family
for a period of 50 years, maybe. And then after that, you can release it. One reason I wanted to do a 25-year optional deal on it was that, you know, we have this tribal council thing, representative from each community.
I know.
And if I did it 1 year at a time, maybe, and I'm buying a house, and I'm building a house on it myself, the tribe didn't build it for me. Or these other special programs that they have, HUD program or whatever, didn't build it for me. I built it on my own, see. And one thing I did that was that this tribal council representative is every 2 years. Now, this year tribal council might sign my 2-year lease. But then if a new man comes in and he decides he didn't like me, he could turn my lease down.
There you'd be.
And there I'd be with a house and no land, see.
Did that ever happen in your knowledge?
Not that I know of.
That's theoretically
in my mind that when I built that house today and paid some on it, I had some money and borrowed some money with it too, and it was going to take me 10 years to pay it out, and I just said that this might could happen. It may not happen at all, but I want to take safety precautions on it just in case.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd like to ask you something, and then probably we better end it because there'd be other waiting, but tell me what a social worker does in a community like this. Just give me some idea what it is you do.
Our program consists of general assistance program. When we say general assistance, that's assisting people that are needy in general, not in certain categories, but if they are needy, and we help them because first maybe because of death in the family, maybe the husband is dead and the wife never worked and has kids to feed, and then we have to come in and get resources for them. But actually, first we help them for a month or two, then we get the county to help, the state to help. If the husband works, we try to get Social Security for him. If he was a veteran, we try to file veteran compensation for him. We sort of a resource agent type, you know. We don't actually help, our agency does not directly help the people all the time, but we get resources for them. Like Social Security is one that a lot of people don't know about that you can get when the husband dies, has been working, if he has enough quarters that he can get help. A lot of people don't know that, so we got to come in and help him, tell the wife this is what you can do, and we'll help you fill out those papers and work that out. If he was a veteran, we try to work VA compensation out for the kids. But the main thing, sort of, all these resources, I like to bring this out first, is that whether if he's a veteran, Social Security, or whatever they can get, if they weren't legally married, the kids cannot get help. And that's one of the main things around here that people cohabit together and won't realize or cannot realize or doesn't realize that the kids is in the end gonna be the one who's neglected or cannot get the help. Because we have so many cases like that lately. Like if the man and the woman live together for 10, 15 years, then all of a sudden he dies. But the kids, they actually put it in his name, but the man wasn't legally married to her. And regulation says that they got to be legally married before they can get VA compensation or they can get Social Security. And this is one problem that we have, that we do. And then we take care of child welfare programs, that is putting kids in foster homes if taken by the court or parents' consent or whatever. And then we work with juvenile delinquency program. We have a Choctaw Youth Development Center here, and that's sort of a prevention program for the younger kids so that they will not go to the state training school. But if the youth center could not control these kids and they keep on being uncontrollable, then they will eventually end up in the state training school. And we provide program for sort of, we're not an adoption agency, we cannot do that. The state has to do that, but we help in a way for that type of program. But those are our programs, but we cover the whole area where there's Indian lives. That's where we're at. We're supposed to have a jurisdiction limit, but usually we don't. We serve this area, Choctaw Agency, and then we also serve an area in Louisiana, the Chittimachi Indian
Tribe. Yes, I called on the head man of the Chittimachis last month.
You did?
Yeah, Leroy Burgess.
Mm-hmm.
Have you met him?
I haven't. My boss.
You don't go down there, do
my
you?
My boss went down there, and Mr. Harold Keith, he's a nice young man, too.
I haven't met him.
No, he's my boss, social service there. He supervised the whole area, social service department, and he's a nice young man. I like to work for him. Very good man.
Well, why do they send the social work out of here? Why don't the Chittimachis pick it up themselves? They're federally recognized.
Yeah, I do not know. I mean, actually, social working all together, we're not working problems case by case there. All we do is sort of an advising agency, I believe. It's under this agency.
Yeah.
Chittimachi's under this agency.
I noticed that in the National Congress of American Indians, the handbook they put out. They're official.
Yes, sir, and they're officially under this
agency. But you know, they've got a little headquarters. Mm-hmm. I've been in it. And they have a reservation of something like 282 acres. They got,
is that right?
Yeah, 350 people or something like that. They got a nice little place. It's real, real attractive little reservation.
Yeah, Mr. Keith took pictures of the office building and so forth, and we saw.
They're building a new craft shop and so on. It's going to be a beaut, and the headquarters goes in there. Well, but you're a field worker, so in this process you're describing, you go out and talk to the people.
Yes, we set up field days in the communities. Like, you know, we have 7 communities, and most of the communities, they have school, and like the area that I go, they have a school. And I have an office space there where I say I'll be there, say like Redwater, I go to Wednesdays, and I say I'll be there at 10 o'clock between 10 and 12. And so the outreach work over there, go and announce it, the social worker will be here between 10 and 12 at the school, and you can come meet him. And then I have already set up some people that I want to see myself, that I have records up there. And after 10 to 12, then I go make a home visit to the homes that I'm supposed to visit for that day. And then some people, if they got a way to come up to the office, then they come up to the office. Frankly, every day we got people in the office all the time.
Now, you say sometimes you run a little tape recorder on specific. Well, what is the object?
Well, the object of that is we got to keep a sort of a report on what we do each day, or what the man said to me and I said to him, or whatever. Like his age, he doesn't know his birth date or whatever, then we take sources from him. So say, that man knew me a long time ago, the man I live for, so forth. So I take it in tape And then I have to get it typed to have it in the record so that I can follow this up. See, I take the case review just to sort of a narrative I got to put in the report, in his record, so that I can keep this. I got to make a narrative anyway. So I want to tape it, so I want to know what he says. See.
But now you get out into the field, if you told him, I remember what you told me earlier, 2 days a week. And what do you do the rest of the time?
I stay in the office and take care of records.
Put the care of the cases in order.
Right. And most of the time when we're there, we're not there all the time. We have this school. They might have a kid, a student here at this school might have a problem, wants to talk to social worker. Well, they call us and we say, well, we come over and talk with them. And we come over here and talk to kids here. You know, try to understand their problem, whatever problem they have, you know. So actually, we kind of spread out thin right now. We have three workers in the field, and our boss and two secretaries, but we actually don't stay there all the time. We have work all the time. Some marriage counseling has to be done. We go family counseling, just practically almost everything that we do.
Have the other field workers got training like such as you've got?
Yes. We try to, well, individual education, that's up to the individual, whether he wants to go on further his education, that's up to them. That part, that's mainly up to them. But if they want to get more training, then if the training is under the social service, then we all do the same type of program.
Right. Well, I expect we better end it, Mr. Gibson, because Mr. Wilson's waiting to talk to me.
All right.
Switch it off, will you please?